Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
And now,
it's time for
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Hello and welcome to Inside Conan, colon, an important Hollywood podcast. You can't forget the colon.
No, otherwise it's just a, well, it makes sense without.
You need some punctuation there.
Something there.
And the colon's an important body part. One of my most important.
Yes. The semicolon. When's the last time you used a semicolon? I think seventh grade during the how to use a semicolon class.
Yeah, I like to go full blown colon.
All right, now our producer's like, are you going to say your names at any point? Hi, I'm Mike Sweeney.
Hi, Mike Sweeney.
Hi, and you might be?
I'm Jesse Gaskell.
All right. And we're the hosts of Inside Conan, colon, an important Hollywood podcast. This season, we're taking a look at Conan on the road.
That's right.
All of his adventures outside the studio over the years.
Yes, when we set him free in the wild.
Sometimes with actual shooting permits, mostly all done illegally.
Yes, with greased palms.
Mm-hmm. How are you?
I'm good.
We normally do this in our Larchmont podcast studio.
We do normally do it there, and we, in fact, are still doing it there.
Today.
But we, because the studio's dark, we're just in the same room on our computers.
Right. I'm in a soundproof booth, but I can see you across the way. There you are. Hi. This is ridiculous. Okay.
It is ridiculous.
Yes, it's as if we're in the same room.
And but yeah, we get to come in. It's fun to come into an office now.
I do love coming into an office. Mm-hmm. I'm back to street parking, which is a little out of practice with that here in LA.
I was going to say, because I just saw you out there moving your car, that we're both doing the same infuriating thing. I'm sure it's infuriating to anyone who is going to hear about this, but we have access to monthly parking, but the lot is about a block and a half away.
Right.
And so rather than walk the extra 7 minutes from the lot, we both find street parking, and then we have to move our cars every 2 hours over here.
It's like 80 extra yards, and it's like,
I know. Well, and I got one parking ticket already. How have you had at least one?
Oh, I've gotten three.
Yay.
I mean, to January. That's I get one a month. But one a month. Lately,
so you pay $68 a month to park on the street for 2 hours at a time.
Yeah, it's really dumb.
You didn't get one yesterday and you were parked at a meter all day without plugging it.
Yeah. They're still acting like it's the pandemic.
The pandemic. I know.
Going on, and no one's getting ticketed. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I've always thought that that was one of the city's main revenue sources, it seemed like, because they're so on top of it.
That's a good point. I really did. I had the same thing in New York City where you're like, wow. Without this money, this city would close up because it's the only city service.
It's the main revenue source.
That is run, like the military. And then I was like, yeah, nah.
Well, hey, so speaking of LA versus New York.
Yeah, that's never come up before.
Our guest today was a sketch staple when the show was in New York. And he, in fact, was a member of the very popular Dudes a Plenty sketch.
That's right. Boy, was that a popular sketch.
Oh, it was so funny. Well, it was right around the time, it was in the early aughts.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was a boy band explosion.
Right.
At the time, before the K-pop renaissance. And this was a fake boy band that Conan put together.
Yes. It was a whole video of him saying, hey, I want in on this. And it was all done by writer Andy Blitz, put it together. Mm-hmm. Everyone in it was perfect. It was great casting. They were all terrific. But one real standout was a young man named Colton Dunn.
Yes.
Who is our guest today and who's been so busy. I mean, you'd recognize him.
Oh, he's yeah.
He was on Superstore and Key mm-hmm. & Peele, and he's also been writing on a ton of shows.
Yeah, he's the head writer on a bunch of great shows.
Yep.
So he went on. This was just the very, very beginning of his story career.
Yeah.
So here's Colton Dunn.
She drops the shaker. Hi, Jesse.
Oh, hi. Hi, Sweeney. Hi, Colton.
Hi, Colton.
Welcome to the pod.
Hello, hello.
Welcome to this beautiful studio. Is it intimidatingly nice in here? It scares me a little bit.
This has been a surprisingly nice experience coming in, I'll be honest. Yeah, I was not. It's very nice. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
The space is wonderful.
They converted a sorority house, I think, into this
that's right. space. The sorority is still here. So
hear chanting.
Yeah, booking is sometimes an issue here.
Yeah.
They're pledging, it's rush week.
Okay.
Yeah. But thank you for coming. You were in this comedy bit that aired in 2000, and it was just, it just became a big hit, and it kind of lived on in Conan lore for many mm-hmm. years. I mean, really, people still talk about it, and that's why we wanted to talk to you. And it's called Dudes a Plenty, and it was basically Dudes with a Z, yeah. Yes. And
Plenty with an I.
That's right.
Right. Take that shirt off. And, you know, it was at the height of boy bands. So.
Well, and also the height of people making boy bands. Like it was this idea that they're like, I'm going to get the group together and we're going to make a boy band.
Yeah. Yeah. Simon Cowell.
Making
was
the band.
Cranking them out.
Yeah. Puff Daddy made a band.
The band was a big show.
Yeah.
And it was all people, you're right, profiling kind of the maniacs. He was usually, you know, like one man who managed and created five bands simultaneously.
Master. Yeah.
So it was a perfect scenario for Conan to play the puppet master.
Yes.
And it was all about his journey creating this one.
His vision.
Yeah. So it was exactly that, a parody of these behind the scenes boy band shows.
Yeah.
And
we're going to reminisce about your time on Late Night with Conan O'Brien.
Can't wait, man. I love it. Best time of my life.
Really?
Was it?
Oh, it was great.
Oh.
First time on television?
Yeah. Oh, was
That's
it?
Yeah.
What we were wondering.
Okay.
Where it fit in with your many
very
appearances
first
on TV.
Appearance on.
Oh wow.
On television. It was on Conan
National
O'Brien.
TV.
On
yeah.
National Network Television.
Can you tell us a bit of what you were doing prior to that?
Yeah, I was doing like comedy in New York. I was doing improv comedy at the
UCB.
Upright Citizens Brigade.
Mm-hmm.
I also did a. This theater called Chicago City Limits was more of a short form improv comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of came from short form improv comedy into the longer form Upright Citizen Brigade Theater. And that happened in New York. So it was just through there. I was doing that stuff and working at a video store.
Oh, cool.
I'm curious because I remember Chicago City Limits.
Yeah.
And they were like the only improv troupe in New York at the time and then UCB came along
pretty much
and you were kind of straddled both.
Very smart. Yeah.
I felt like I
had
never
a
heard
finger
of,
in both pies.
Yeah. That's right. I never short form and long form.
Uh-huh.
And then I never heard of Chicago City Limits again. I'm wondering, like, did they just go, did the UCB kind of take over? That's what it. To
well,
me,
you know what?
Not being There's, that into it, I that was.
I mean, I'm.
My
it's got to be a longer podcast,
right? Okay, all right.
But
all right.
And I would love to hear it. And I only know a small, tiny chapter of the story of Chicago City Limits.
Right.
But just to sort of get everybody on the same page, it was kind of this short form. It was basically like a Second City, basically.
Yeah.
All right. But they. they were people from Chicago who came to New York and kind of started sort of the short form review show, very much like Second City, where they'd have like the parody name, like, you know, one in the bush is worth two in the you know, right, right. Pelosi, yeah. You know, like something like that, you know, like that's the name
of
the show.
They were ahead of their time.
Yeah. They did that kind of comedy, and it was like the only like paid improv show.
Oh, it was paid.
And I think for a time it was like the longest running show in New York City.
Right, it was
18 months
continuously running for years, and it did have like a heyday for sure. When I got out there to New York, the theater UCB hadn't even really opened yet, and. Chicago City Limits was the only place to get paid to do improv in town. And so I auditioned for it. I did not get in. And then UCB kind of got up and running. Mm-hmm. And they would let me intern at the theater for classes. And so I started doing stuff there. And then the next round of auditions, I went and auditioned again for Chicago City Limits. Mm-hmm. And I got in almost kind of around the same time that I got onto like a Herald team at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater. So I really was doing both of them. And man, that was a funny time to like watch sort of the one theater kind of process and deal with this other theater that opens up.
Yeah.
And even the other
kid
theater.
In town.
And like maybe talking shit about them and you're like, yeah.
100%. Oh. Or like, it reminds me of this is another mashup, the same kind of time period. I worked at a video store, like I told you. And I remember my manager, we were in the office and I was eating my sandwich before work and she was just going on about how Netflix is never going to work.
Oh, I love
and
it.
And that, like, people are, you know, because, from our experience at the video store, it was true. She was like, people are kind of stupid. They need to come into the store and ask questions to find anything. And so there's no way this is going to work.
Stick with us. Yeah.
And so it's kind of like that with Chicago City Limits. It was like, mm-hmm. nobody's going to go see these dumb shows downtown. And they're like doing improv. They're just getting one suggestion and then just going for 30 minutes. They're not like doing like a game where they're going forward and reverse or one person's not acting like, you know, a magician.
There's no hula hoops. Yeah.
Well, where's the bunny with the next line of dialogue?
Look at her box of wigs in the back.
Do they have a Viking helmet? Do they have a Viking helmet down there? So yeah, I did straddle both worlds and kind of got to see the come up of one and sort of the ending of a chapter.
While hedging your bets in both.
Definitely hedging my bets. Always. Always hedging my bets.
I think you both are making valid points about the other troupe.
Yes. I do have a funny story about going into UCB when I was younger, and I used to do a thing called comedy sports. And comedy sports has
a
specific—
Z?
Yeah. Comedy sports with a Z. It has like
I'm
a specific—
laughing already.
It's hilarious. It's like two teams of act elites go head-to-head in improv comedy. I did it in high school, so I had like my high school like comedy sports shirt on.
Oh yeah, you lettered in comedy sports.
I lettered in comedy sports. I was really cool. I was going for my internship at UCB, and I'm sitting in the box office, and Matt Besser kind of walks in and looks in the window and goes, "Yeah, take that shirt off." And I was like, "Oh no, it's my comedy sports." He's like, "Yeah, I know it is."
Oh, I can read.
Yeah.
And, you had to go shirtless.
So then I just had to take off my shirt, man, and just let it fly. That became my thing. I was
the
shirtless guy.
Improver.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's terrible. As someone who's taken classes with Matt Besser, that he's. Like,
well, for him, it was more of a branding thing. I think for him, it was just like, no, dude, I don't want anyone walking in here thinking they're about to see comedy sports.
No, like,
with that's a Z.
Not with a Z. There's no athletes
that's
in here.
That's where I draw the line.
I respect it.
So how did you, were you at the same time then auditioning for TV stuff? Or how did you even come into the late night orbit?
So the late night orbit kind of came into the theater. You know, like the theater at that time really just sort of became like where people,
the breeding grounds
for the especially the remotes
where the casting people, because they started using the original UCB for
sure.
We used them in sketches starting right when they moved there in like 95, late 95, early 96,
and they were probably like, and they're doing it for free.
we know
that right.
Anything we pay them is better than
it's
free.
It's all great. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so then it was like, oh, we just kept going there to look for, you know, more performers.
Yeah. And it was, so I was, I don't think I had a manager at the time. I was like trying to find managers. And so, you know, all the auditions that I would go to would be those kind of the weird ones you see in like the old movies, you know, where it's like you and 20 people just showing up and everybody's holding their headshots and, you know.
This guy wants me to be shirtless for this audition. Oh, and it's just me and him. Oh, what is this?
What is this? I saw you at the theater shirtless. I wanted to bring you in.
That's how you got into plenty.
Exactly. So yeah, they came to me and it was Andy Blitz.
He was a writer.
Wrote Dudes of Plenty. And I don't even know. This might have been before people were texting. So this all might have been phone calls where I think he like called and was like, can you like sing and dance? And I was like, yeah. And then.
And could you?
Yeah. Okay. I could sing and dance. And then, I mean, not professionally, like, and also, you know, who knows? Maybe not. I was just overly confident at the time. So I was like, yeah, 100%.
Well, dude, check out. A lot of actors, it's like, can you horseback ride? And you're like, yeah, of course. And then you would learn that.
Oh, they're really answering the question, will you do this? Yeah. No, but I could, at the time, for sure, I could definitely sing and dance. I could still sing and dance. Look, check this out.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Look at this dance
move. We'll insert that later. Yeah.
We can't cover for you.
Oh, shit.
We can't go, oh, my God.
You could deep fake it. But St. Celia called me, same questions. Could you come in and, you know, just kind of come in for like an audition, you know? And so I went in to an audition and it was pretty much, I think, just an audition to see if I could physically like dance and look like I could dance with real dancers and sing a little bit. And I guess I hit that bar enough to be able to go in. And so then it was like me and these other Broadway guys.
Oh, they were Broadway. Yeah.
They were like all Broadway.
You guys did really sound good together. It was
those guys were like
better
real.
Than it needed to be.
when I did arrive, I was like waiting to see, you know, other UCB people who I was like, oh, there'll be some other UCB people who could pass as singers and dancers. And there were no others. It was just these other actual singers and dancers.
Yeah. Yeah. So you showed up. Did you have to take off your shirt for the audition? That was a question I had.
But then, you know what, though? You know, I did. I do remember,
though.
Well,
you were in a tank top, so, you know.
I am in a tank top in it. And this has only happened, something I found out years later. Somebody who knew me back then was like, no, you were always a shirt-off kind of guy. And I was like, what's that mean? And they were like... Like when you'd go out and we'd be out doing stuff, you would like, you'd take your shirt off.
Oh.
And I was, so I think I was like making fun of some guy I saw walking on the street without a shirt on.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
And they were like, what are you talking about? That's what you used to do. And so maybe she had already seen me with my
shirt
off.
She'd heard the rumors.
I knew that I didn't have like a scar that was deformed or anything.
I always like when it's kind of cold out and I still see guys without shirts.
Yeah.
Like,
what are they doing?
And then you realize, oh, it's their tattoos. Like, they have to show
Oh, they have
off.
To show them. Right.
Yeah.
Even
they
when
were
it's cold.
So expensive.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. They
have
to
get their money's worth.
Yeah, it's not it's not a stroll outside without showing them off.
Yeah. I'm no longer a shirt off guy.
Yeah.
You have two shirts on. I just like
that's
to know.
Right.
Multiple,
you're shirt. Having
multiple
shirts.
Shirt guy.
Yeah. And a beautiful flamingo
so
shirt.
So even if you took that shirt off, you'd still be covered.
I'd still be covered.
So how did they prepare you for what the remote was going to be? Because remotes are different from being in a sketch where there's probably more improv involved.
Yeah. I mean, it was a little bit of a process, you know, because this was like, they really did that song, right?
Yeah.
So like we came in, we had rehearsal for just the song. We had...
It was a two-parter. You taped a whole behind-the-scenes part with Conan.
Yeah.
But then the big payoff, once that was all edited and assembled, you and Dudes of Plenty appeared like Conan.
We did a live
performance.
And you did
the
musical act. Yeah. And it was amazing. It was incredibly well produced.
It won
produced.
A Tony.
That's right.
Short form Tony.
Exactly.
Televised short form Tony.
So it was a live element too, which is another.
It was a live element. I mean, it was like performing on a a late night show. And so it was very exciting. There was just a couple of rehearsals. I think it was really just, we had a rehearsal for the song. We had a rehearsal for the dancing moves. And then the day of, we kind of had a rehearsal with all those things together. The song was pre-recorded. So we had like a session where we went in and just recorded our parts for the song.
Yeah. But it was your voices.
It was all of our voices. And we do sing.
You do.
We are singing in the thing, but it's just we had to have the actual track to back us up.
As most boy bands do.
Most boy bands do.
Yeah.
Is that song online anywhere? Like, is on?
It is.
Like, can you go download on Spotify?
It's on the actual song. Oh, I don't know. I don't know who owns that song.
Could it be a ringtone?
Maybe. Maybe it's a girl's Five Eva thing where
it is my mom's ringtone.
Yeah,
I'm not lying.
For real?
Yeah, she somehow got it saved as a ringtone. Oh, I think somebody made it for her. But
yeah. So did you tell people when you booked this, like, you got to watch this night, or were you like, let me watch it first and then I'll tell people?
Oh no, I definitely told people. I mean, you know, again, this is like before, like, I wasn't able to like text all the people or call all the people I know. So I think I probably just called my mom and
it was
your
AIM
phone tree.
Away message.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Put it on my MySpace page. And then we had the day where we shot the actual sketch that they saw. And that was super fun. That was a blast.
Oh,
And that was your first. So were you nervous, like, in that situation? You were meeting Conan. You were working with these other four actors who came from Broadway. Was it, were you just kind of like, I'm ready for this? Or was part of you kind of like, this is, don't screw it up?
Yeah, I think I definitely thought. I think I remember being like, don't screw this up. Yeah. But because it was these other guys from Broadway, and I had been doing a lot of stuff at UCB, and, you know, Conan fits in very well in that world of comedy,
improv,
you know, as, you know, playing, you know, this crazy guy who's trying to put the band together.
Right.
Yeah.
It felt a little bit easier for me because it was like a group of guys. So it's not all on me to like hold it together.
Right.
And I also probably had done more things similar to what we were doing than the rest of them, I felt. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, I'll just do what I've been doing and, you know, remember your training.
Right. Yeah, you're an act lead.
Right. I'm an act lead.
Get it together.
Don't get a brown bag foul.
Did you get to improvise with Conan?
Oh,
at all? Yeah.
The whole thing was pretty much improvised. You know, they were like, all right, he's going to come in and talk to us and we just be guys in a band. And so it was him, you know, he's just like laying into us, you know, and giving us his ridiculous ideas.
Yeah.
And, you know, all we have to do is be like, this is the most amazing. That's a really insightful thing. You know, we're here to do this.
Yeah. Just be really extra sincere.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm glad you cleared that up because I think some people watch remotes and even, you know, people watch Conan interviewing guests and they think everything is scripted. But the remotes are really just, there's kind of a loose idea and maybe some beats.
I think this one, I'm pretty sure it was like, Conan's going to come in and he's going to go over the end pose for the song.
Right.
That's all we know. And so then he just comes in and, you know, and I think he's playing along too, you know, playing off of each other. I don't think he even really knows, you know, he was improvising as well. You know,
right.
100%.
Like, he kept changing everyone's name and that was improvised.
Yeah.
And
then
I wonder whether he had the song, title of the song already. Do you
Baby,
remember?
I Love You, Baby.
Yeah.
Baby.
Was that?
I Wish You Were My Baby.
Baby, I Wish You Were My Baby. I don't know. I don't know if they had written
like
that out.
He was coming up
or,
with it in the room.
Or like, who came up with the melody? Did Conan just I wonder if he ad-libbed that. Or if
we'll have to see who has writing credits on it.
Oh, on the song.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Someone's getting these big BMI checks.
Payouts.
Oh, my God.
7-cent checks.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Find out. We'll get to the bottom of it.
And then did you guys have a choreographer that was actually teaching you?
Real choreographer
moves?
Taught us real choreography. And I was not, you know, and that's when I realized, like, okay, there's a difference between, like, I'm willing to dance and I can dance.
Right.
Because, and this is very funny because this happened to me twice. So in this one, it was, you know, a situation where the lady came in and she's like, okay, so here's what we're going to do. And she, like, does, like, the moves. All right. He like, does all the moves, right? And then it's like, okay, so now.
Now you
well,
do
let's,
it.
Let's go ahead and we'll just go through it. You know, we'll do it at halftime or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And then it like starts up and the guys are all like, doot, doot. They just like it all down. They're like kind of laughing about certain parts. Like, oh yeah, it's funny when you have to do this.
This is a recurring nightmare that I have.
Yeah. And I'm like, what?
Oh.
Well, now I had that nightmare twice.
Yeah.
Because then I did this show.
It was real.
Name is escaping me right now. But I did this television show. Very funny show. It was like a procedural show, but it was a comedy.
Uh-huh.
What's that show called? Angie Tribeca. That was the show.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a funny show.
In it, there's a boy band. The story of the week is a boy band is involved in a murder.
Oh,
and,
that's
typecasting.
Yeah, no kidding.
And so they bring me in to do it. But the other people in this fake boy band things are like Joey McIntyre.
No.
Like real boy band guys.
Oh, no.
Like there's a guy from NSYNC.
Oh, no.
But then they're all like older.
But that other guy from NSYNC. Yeah.
And so like,
So they must have seen Dudes a Plenty and thought it was a real boy
band.
Didn't
even know it. Didn't even know it. In that situation, they were just bringing me in because they you know, thought that I'd be funny and they wanted to make sure they didn't just have, you know, I was supposed to look like an older boy band guy. And so they like, so I go in to do this. Exact same thing happens where the choreographer's like, this is going to be our little dance. All right, now we'll do it again at halftime. And those guys are all like, oh, man.
Oh,
Dustin, you know. Dusting off the wheels, and they're like all right into it again.
Yeah.
And then like, again. Colton, what's going on?
I think there's a few times in the actual dance, if you watch it, where you can see that clearly they made a new move for me to go do while the other guys do some other cool move.
Yeah. I went to one dance class in LA, and it was exactly like that. It's awful to be around real dancers.
It is.
And all so those upsetting. Other ex-boy band guys were right up to speed on all the moves.
They after their did layoff. Not skip a beat. There's a reason these guys were pros.
They practiced everybody.
It wasn't their
singing. You know, and it was, I'll be honest, it was like.
I'm going to get called today.
It was after that day. I was like, I like had a huge respect for those guys because I was like, I can't believe, because we'd like to do these moves all day.
Yeah.
And like, they just slipped right into it. And like, everything they did, I was like, wow, that really did look cool and good.
That happened to me once. I got cast years ago to play a baseball player for a Japanese documentary TV show.
Oh, right.
Named Mo Berg. And they're like, you know, and it's this, can you horse?
Yeah. Can you ride play a baseball? Horse?
They're like, are you a good baseball player? I'm like, sure. They drove this huge crew up to Oneonta, New York, and we played at like a Yankees AA baseball stadium. They had over 100 people dressed in period dress in the crowd, and they had a pitcher from single A Yankee team pitching to me, and
like, I can hit off a tee.
Yeah, it was like, what? You know, I was like, oh my
God. And they were like, so you're gonna hit the ball?
Yes.
And I was like,
but all these people who not only were watching, but had spent an hour changing into 1940s garb to watch, and I was just like, oh, mother fucker. And so, you know, I'm like swinging, missing.
It sounds like a Nathan Fielder show.
Oh my God. And the director didn't speak English. He was Japanese. And he went up to a translator and the translator came over and he said, Mike, the director said to hit the ball. And I'm like, I'm trying to hit the ball. I bet.
It's not a choice.
Oh my God.
Did you get it?
I eventually did.
Oh, good.
Just but one. Just the one.
Just awful.
Yeah.
Awful.
These are just.
It's, just the one hit.
Once they got it, they're like, okay, we're done.
Wow.
Yeah.
With everyone watching you.
Oh,
God. It's like having sex on camera.
Why did I say yes to this? But I got a comedy sports shirt out of it.
Yeah.
So.
There you go.
There was a big
payoff.
That's
an actual sport.
Right everywhere but UCB. Yes.
Some people like to deep clean every Saturday morning. I prefer to spend a few minutes every day keeping things fresh with Lysol. Lysol's brand new Day All-Purpose Cleaner cleans and kills 99.9% of viruses and bacteria on hard, non-porous surfaces around your home with a fragrance that feels like a tropical getaway for your senses. Don't just clean, Lysol clean.
Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' cold K-Cup pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Well, let's go to the live performance element.
Yeah.
What was that like being on late night in front of the studio audience?
It was a probably very surreal day, I think. You know, because like you come in and got to stay sort of in those dressing rooms there that I ended up like becoming very familiar with. But at the time it was like, oh, this is so cool. And I'm like in a dressing room and, you know, oh, I could eat this food if I want to. And
like, it's real food.
Yeah, it's real food here.
And then on day three, you're like,
and I think and it was that whole day experience too to shoot that one. Because we came in early to like obviously, you know, wardrobe and get dressed. I think I ate at the studio cafeteria for lunch.
Yeah.
I was like, this is so cool.
Yeah. NBC commissary.
Yes, that's right.
In 30 Rock, this is back in New York City.
And then did it, went off without a problem. So I'm super stoked. And I know that the show's going to air, and everyone's going to see it. And it was awesome.
Did people recognize you after that? Like, did anyone know?
You mean like, did people stop me in the street and be like, hey, man.
You got dudes of plenty.
Only like comedy nerds.
Okay,
You know? And that is
those are people.
Yeah, but there's not that many of them. But more later on in my life when it was like somebody who'd be like, aren't you,
right.
And like, but it was more helpful, those kind of things were more helpful for my family and like friends back home.
Oh, to see that this was a real career.
Since I had gone out to New York. So like for me, it was more like, oh good. Okay. So now they, they're all like, whoa, man, that was, that was cool. And
six months of getting them off your back.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Are you really in a boy band? That's it. I was really confused.
When can I get the album?
You guys are on tour? I mean, it's your mother's ringtone.
I got a tattoo.
And then you came back for a reprisal?
We shot a music video.
Yeah,
Dudes of Plenty had to come out with a banging video, I believe was the reasoning behind it.
Yeah.
And so he was going to direct this amazing video where we're like underwater or something. But it was also like
an astronaut underwear. Yeah.
But it was like, I think the other thing was too, because maybe the other storyline was like people were spending a ton of money on music videos.
Yeah.
Right.
And so it was this big budget music video, but then the budget got cut. And so that's why that was kind of like we're clearly, we did everything on a green screen.
Yeah.
So we did that. And then I think that was it.
For Dudes of Plenty. Yeah.
I think that was it.
That was it. And Tom Sharpling was in.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah,
made a cameo, which it wasn't a cameo because he probably wasn't famous at that time.
Yeah.
But yeah, he played like the craft services guy.
Right.
Who's handing out bagels and ends up in the video. Yes.
That's right. Yes, he is in the video.
Yes.
Yeah. And Lance Bass is actually in it too, but not with you guys, I'm assuming, because he...
No,
there's like an interview segment, I think, with him.
Yeah, but Conan puts him in the video, but...
But not,
right, not him, but with you guys.
Because he's not with us, yeah.
Right.
He says no. He says no to appearing with you.
That's right.
So, yeah, you were never in the same room with Lance Bass at that time.
It's the only time he's ever said no.
Still haven't been.
Oh, wow.
What? Okay.
Still a chance, though.
Well, we've got the door.
Say hello to your.
We knew that was your dream.
And then, your make-a-wish. Choreography with him and get humiliated.
Yeah, exactly. All paying off today.
Oh God! What if we asked you to do choreography?
We flew
but,
in.
You know the overall process, though. You know, looking back on it now that I've like worked on different late night shows,
yeah,
and
I've
done different things. It was a really fun process, I think, not just for me, but probably even for the people making it, because it was a little also doing all the other remotes. Like, it was kind of its own thing, you know? It was very much like, you know, felt like they were, you know, producing this, you know, song along with it. So it felt like a really big, nice piece, you know, that you don't always, it was different than like, I'm the security guard and, you know,
Right.
I'm eating popcorn loudly while Conan's trying to talk. You know, it was a little bit more than you know, even you know, the sort of the just kind of offshoot silly idea bits, which are great too. But
yeah,
so it was very fun to like.
You're right. It was much more ambitious than a lot of the things on Conan, which would be 30-second or two-minute.
Yeah, running down
sketches.
The hallway.
Yeah, exactly as you're describing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
Yeah.
For sure.
And like you said, you and went on to write for the Arsenio Hall show when that came back and Eric Andre
and Key and Peele
and Key and Peele. So you wrote. Yeah. So you worked in late night sketch variety.
Still do.
But
what are you working on now?
Never stop. Yeah. Right now I'm working on a, I can say it. Right now I'm working on a show with Frankie Quinones.
It's a
sketch comedy show.
Awesome.
Great. That I'm developing with him, with Hulu.
Oh, awesome. That's excellent.
Yeah. That's great. So this is like decades in late night now.
I wrote at Mad TV too.
That's right.
Yeah. I'm all about that late night comedy stuff. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, and it makes sense.
The sun is down. Let's get funny.
Where's Colt?
With your background in short form and long form improv, I think that that really checks out, that would translate to sketches and punchlines and jokes. But you have also worked in sitcoms and longer form comedy.
For sure. Yeah. I was on a show called Superstore.
That's right.
I was an actor for a long time.
I loved watching on Superstore, you did a lot of the store announcements, which that had to be a fun.
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah.
That's
originally in the story, they were like that like character, that's all he really did. Like originally, it was just going to be like he kind of did an announcement.
Really?
He was the announcer.
He like did an announcement at the beginning and maybe one in the middle, and then like a little bit one at the end, kind of like take you along the story. And they're like, you know, and people were, I remember at first being like, wow, he's not going to be that much of the story. But also being like, but that seems like super easy job, right? Like I'm just doing announcements.
No dancing.
No dancing. Yeah, there was no dancing. Just doing announcements and not too much. So I loved it. I loved the idea of like most actors would be like, I want to be in it more. But I was like, no, man, that's great.
Beginning,
middle, end.
All right, cool. That's great. But then
they were like, nope.
Garrett, everybody loved Garrett. And
then
you get along with everybody.
Up by being good. They're extending.
But
no, that's always so cool when an actor starts with like, you know, sort of ancillary character. And then you earn your spot on the...
Right.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I think maybe they just were like, I don't know. I don't know if it was my merits or just the way
modest.
The story
worked.
Okay.
No, you popped in there just like, more Garrett. More Garrett.
We'll see.
And you also wrote some episodes, too?
Yeah, I wrote two episodes.
That's so
great. That's
great.
That's really cool.
That was a blast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was that stuff that you, like, stories that you had pitched? Or how did that come about?
I didn't necessarily pitch the stories. They have like in that situation where it's sort of the actor on the show is going to write an episode. I'm not necessarily in the room as a writer while they're sort of breaking like that season kind of coming up with the idea for that season. At that point when you come in to write an episode in that situation, they're usually like, here's like. Three storylines that we're kind of dealing with, do any of these appeal to you? Okay. And then you kind of, you know, but I mean, mm-hmm. you definitely get to bring in stuff that you want to bring in and,
yeah.
you know, add things that you wanted to add or like try and little jokes.
You probably dialed Garrett way back. I'm going back to
100%.
The beginning, the middle.
Then Garrett leaves.
Yeah, right. Garrett dies?
In this episode, Garrett goes to Maui.
Oh yeah, you film everything in Maui.
Wait, finally it has to be on Lance set. Bass. The script is insane.
Yeah. But that was a great time to write.
Yeah,
it's
a really long running show. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Sitcoms don't get that kind of run very often anymore.
No, it was great. And I thought it ended really well. You know,
yeah.
Can't complain about anything.
Wow.
No complaints.
You're the
at all?
Only person who's ever said that.
We have it on tape. No one would believe us.
Well, yeah, I can't now. I can't complain if right. I do come up with something. They'll throw right. this in my face.
Yeah. And how have you balanced? Because you really do it all in terms of writing and acting and you know, developing. Like, how? What has any of those sort of taken priority, or do they kind of all take the forefront at different times?
I guess wherever the check is coming
right,
from
right.
is what takes the lead.
Yeah, like are you, because I assume but, that it's yeah, harder to.
At this point, it is, you know, a career. So it's, you know, very, you know, it's sort of like, it ebbs and flows, you know, especially after like doing something like Superstore. Mm-hmm. You know, I certainly was more like, oh, what can I get in on the development side? You know, what can I do? Some more writing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like to do a lot of voiceover stuff. I like to do cartoons and stuff like
right,
that.
Right.
But there's also these like motivations, you know, that only happen with time where it's like, well, I have, you know, my son here at home and
right.
I don't necessarily want to go away for 6 months right. to act
Toronto.
In, you know, in, you know, a short, you know, a horror film or something.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or like, you know, that kind of thing. So like, you know, having a writing job close to home or voiceover work close to home or something where I just go shoot for a little bit and then come back. Those kind of things are also factors into where my creative energy goes. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's sort of like, there's two sides of it. Because at first, you're following your passion, doing whatever you want to do. And then it kind of becomes your job. And now it's my job. I have to get very successful at my job. And then I can go back to just being like, oh, well, which way do I want to go
right,
now? You know,
right,
like,
right. Definitely. Yeah, I know.
The sweet spot.
Yeah.
You have to earn the right to say no to things.
Yeah.
I'm curious about the your writing experience with late night. Versus and also comedy sketch like Mad TV and Keen Peele and really Eric Andre actual a nightly talk show. Did you prefer one over the other? Or did you find the experiences similar in a way?
Wow. I mean, those are all extremely different experiences.
Yeah.
That are all kind of really dependent, you know, sort of top down, right? Like, who's the host of the show? Right. Who's the head writer? Right. Those people all kind of decide what the workflow and the process is for each one of those shows. And, you know, you hear great stories and nightmare stories from all different places. You know, I love the structure of the late night, you know, of the late show.
Yeah.
Job. I loved like
it's
coming
like the
in
same
the morning
thing every day, kind of
getting the, you know, the cake or getting the, you know, the sheet of paper that has all the news stories on it, you know, writing, you know, 10 jokes for each one of those things. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I like that process. That's something that I'll do to this day sometimes.
Oh,
just
really?
As like,
that's a sickness.
Well, no, like if I have like something, if I'm going to write, you know, say I have to like write, you know, I want to write a couple scenes in a longer project.
Right. Mm-hmm.
When I get up in the morning, I might just go through the news, you know, like the Twitter trending or whatever.
Yeah. Right.
And just write out a couple of jokes,
you
know, for that, whatever the thing is, just to kind of get a little bit loose. So I love that.
That's a great
tip. I love
tip.
Remotes with like late night shows. Like, I love that because that's a sketch comedy, you know, like that's really one of my favorite things to do, you know, like I remember at Arsenio, this thing that I wrote for Arsenio to do that I thought was very funny. It's called The Black Witness Through History. And so it's, I think there was like this viral video at the time of this guy who was like, you know, they were just like kept interviewing like the funniest dude at like a crime.
Like the Hide Your Wives.
Oh, yeah, right. Yes.
I remember that.
You
know? Right. Yeah.
And so it's like this kind of character, but it's like Arsenio through history. So it's like at the Hindenburg, you know, and it's like Arsenio's like, oh man, that thing will explode. And I don't even, you got to get your blimps out of here. These people are blowing them up.
Oh, man.
Very funny. And, you know, so it's like those like little things that you can, you know, you it's really hard to kind of fit that into like a, you know, a so sitcom specific, or, right. you know, into something else. It's so specific and like being able to pull it from like the viral video and then do it that night. Mm-hmm. There's that immediacy like from the short form improv comedy background that I have that, you know, I really enjoy. You know, and then obviously with, you know, you get into more sketch. You have kind of like the sketch comedy of Mad TV was super fun to do, but it was very, you know, it almost feels like a corporate, like it wasn't as, it wasn't like groundbreaking or anything like that. You know, it was very like goofy stuff, you know, the blind, you know, Kung Fu Master with Bobby Lee, you know, just like super silly stuff. But then, you know, to Key and Peele where it's like, okay, now I'm doing the sketch comedy and I'm using the sort of current event stuff.
Yeah,
and
social commentary.
We're able to take a little bit more time here. It's not like, you know, and so, you know, it's definitely a wide variety, all different awesome places to work, all work different strengths. I don't really have any real favorites, but I always wanted to be a writer on Conan. I remember always being like, oh man, that would be like the coolest job in the world. Like thinking that would be the best.
Well, I feel like you made the right choice because you got to work on so many other things instead. And if you'd been a writer on Conan, you would have just done that.
Oh, yeah. I didn't have a choice. That wasn't...
you would never
You maybe understood me wrong. I didn't have a choice to write on Conan. That wasn't like an option that came up for me. I was...
Well, you know, no one ever left the writing
staff. No one ever
staff.
Left. I know.
That's a good... That means you did a good job.
Yeah, it was a very good job.
It was good because of that NBC commissary.
Mm. That's right.
Man, it's pretty great.
But did you go through that? I mean, before you started getting those jobs, were you going through the process of submitting packets and stuff for late night?
Yeah. I think I made one for Conan at some point. Yeah, I definitely did packets for that, SNL, like all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Right.
You know, that at that time I was a lot younger and definitely was more focused on performing. So, I think at that time it would have been, you know, I also may have, like, gotten the job and then been like, I'm going to be the star, you know.
Right.
What am I doing, you know?
I have to sit in a room for 8 hours with these other idiots.
Yeah.
Because
I auditioned for this thing called Boom Chicago. Different than Chicago City Limits.
It's in a
show in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
And going out there and performing. That's where I met Jordan Peele and a bunch of other people and Seth Meyers. And I worked out there, and that's where I really started writing a lot more just for myself and for the show. And so that's when I came back from there. I think I was a little bit more like open about being a writer or taking writing jobs, doing that as a job and understanding what that was and enjoying it, I think, a little bit more.
Right. That is a new way of ego gratification. As a performer, I could see you thinking like, oh no, I want the attention. And then it's like, oh, I write this and get to see it put up. That's also
I still get attention for that.
Yeah, that's right.
Like I remember writing Mad TV. I wrote a sketch called LAPD Pinatas. So I think you can get an idea what these pinatas were. So the pinatas were all people of color.
Oh, God.
And it was a commercial. Wow. Ike Barinholtz plays a cop. You can find it online. It's very, maybe, I think it still holds up.
Unfortunately, it still holds up.
People still love pinatas. Yeah. That's why I think it holds up.
And, you know, Ike's like telling you what, you know, these are the different pinatas. We got the runner, the, you know, the I forget what they are. They're very funny. You have to go check them out.
Yeah.
And I remember writing it and writing down all these like different, the crackhead, like all these different like names that he's calling them and just saying like, this is a pinata that looks like this. And then the day that they're going to shoot at them, like getting a call and being like, hey, can you come down and approve the pinatas.
Yes.
And like going down there and like being like, oh my God, this like came from my brain and somebody made the crackhead pinata.
Yeah.
And I think I had the runner for years. I had the runner for years just hanging in my room. It's like pinata of this guy.
Where is that pinata?
I ended up throwing it away. But
your son was like, I broke it open. There's no candy in there. This is crap. Thanks, guts. Dad. Oh, that's great.
I still have a Grand Theft Auto, GTA, the board game, which is a sketch that we wrote for Mad TV, and they made the board game.
That's really fun.
And I have that.
Oh my God. How many hundreds of sketches do you think you've written over the years?
Oh my God. Hundreds?
Right. Yes. Maybe thousands?
Yeah. I think I'm probably into thousands at this point. Yeah, I'm definitely into thousands.
And with shows like that, there's like you come up with these great ideas and you do them, and then it's like you can't even get to say, like, you have to move on to the next sketch, right? There's no time.
Yeah, I'm amazed that you could even reference sketches so quickly.
It's only because we've started talking about them now. Now it starts to roll out a little bit more.
Because it all feels like a blur when I think back. Yeah.
I've heard so many people say, like you're saying, like, come on down and check out the pinatas.
Mm-hmm.
That feeling, the writer saying, wow.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, if you're working with good people, it like they add stuff that you couldn't even.
Yeah.
You're like, oh my God, this is better.
Yeah, right.
I mean, you took it and you elevated it like 20%.
You
fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's the thing that like it takes time to get there, right?
Right.
It takes so much time to get there, more than it does to when you get on stage and get a laugh and get that energy.
Right.
Very immediate. But once you get there, it's like very similar, if not sometimes more powerful of a draw.
Yeah.
The idea of creating, you know.
Yeah.
Does that pinata last forever?
Well, almost.
Almost forever. Well, thanks, Colton. This
has
been
a blast,
so fun.
Guys.
Yeah,
I know.
Was there
anything we didn't get to?
Well, I also have a show coming out on Netflix called The Recruit.
Oh, yeah.
It comes out mid-December.
It's a spy show?
It's a spy show. It's about spies and stuff. Yeah.
And
I'm a straight up spy, dude.
Really? And this is, you were just acting in this or writing as well?
Just acting.
Excuse me, just acting.
No dancing.
I'm just acting, but I still use a lot of improv. So I definitely know that some of my improv bits have gotten into
the
final
credit,
cuts.
Then.
So
can I ask you a question?
People check it out.
In a show like that, I'm assuming it's scripted.
Oh yeah.
Do you kind of on your own do a little improv and see if it
test
catches fire? Test the waters with the people you're working with.
The rule I do is I do it as scripted first.
Okay.
All right. I focus hard on doing that.
Yeah.
Even harder if there is something else I want to do. I will really try to nail it the way that I think they want it.
Okay.
And then when I feel like I did that, then I just do it. I also do, then like, and this may, people are like, I don't like this. I don't ask if I can try to do something else.
That's what I was wondering.
I'll make sure that I did it the way it's scripted.
Right.
Yeah.
And then like when they yell action the next time, I'll just do the other thing. Some people
don't like that.
Do they tell you then when they don't or no?
Well, I mean, so far, nobody's ever told me they didn't like it.
But.
I'll talk to the other actor. Like, if it's something you have to go back and forth.
Right.
But a lot of times I do think if there's any, young actors out there, look at it. But a lot of times people will ask too much permission, I think, sometimes.
Yeah.
And then in the response sometimes discourages them from even performing their idea well. Somebody's like, I guess just try whatever you want.
Yeah.
And then the pressure's on.
Right.
I just gun it.
Ask That's for forgiveness smart. Rather than permission.
100%.
Yeah.
And show it. I mean, when you just give them the evidence right there and you've done it, they're like,
well, then they should be grateful for it because
you're
adding to the comedy.
And then I could see them going, like, looking forward to whatever your next line is.
Right.
Like, let's do it again.
And then
they're hoping.
Like, we stopped writing buttons for these
scenes.
Colton's going to do it for us. Just lazy writers. Well, thank you so much, Colton. It's been fun.
Thank you, guys.
Colton.
Thank you to Colton Dunn for joining us.
Thanks, Colton. Thanks for coming in.
That was fun. No thanks for keeping your shirt on.
that's right. He was shirtless.
I like to objectify men.
Well, nice. Don't even think of doing it with me. I'm always dressed 24 hours a day.
You are. You're always wearing four shirts just in
showers.
Case.
That's right. Hey, we have a listener question.
Yeah, we sure do.
And we want to give an honest answer to this question. It's from a fellow named John in Omaha, Nebraska. Ah, this is great. Hello, Mike and Jesse. Wow, 3 exclamation marks. My question is twofold.
Wow.
Over the many entertaining years of the Walker, Texas Ranger lever clips, which was a bit we used to do at late night with Conan O'Brien, mm-hmm. who was the lucky or unlucky writer, producer, editor who was tasked with going through the Walker, Texas Ranger catalog to find the best and juiciest Walker, Texas Ranger clips? Did Conan see the Walker clips before the show, or were they randomized? Mm-hmm. Was his reaction on air a genuine reaction, or did he know which ones were coming from rehearsal? That's a good question. Thank you, John, in Omaha.
Yeah. I love that we're big in Omaha.
Yes. Well, you know, if you count John, very big. Yeah. And of course, Walker, Texas Ranger clips. It was just some of the mostly they were incredible over the top, quick fight scenes.
Chuck Norris just kicking ass. Yeah.
Yeah. The Walker, Texas Ranger. Well, you know what? I can answer that. There were two writers were tasked to do it the first time we did it. And they went down and they watched. They were like, oh, my God, there are so many great clips. And they you know, they cut around 10 clips and we rehearsed them. And people loved them. And then we aired them. And it was an immediate hit. The Walker, Texas Ranger lever was a big hit. And so the problem with, as Jesse, as you know, if anything is like you came up with BuzzFeed lists, like BuzzFeed's running out of ideas, uh-huh. and you came up with that bit, and it was so funny. We just kept doing it, and then you tell me, wasn't that
a blessing and a curse?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's exciting to have something that oh yeah, this is popular, but then you're in charge of it every time, and it's like oh
right. And typically, I'd be like, all right, let's do this 4 times.
Right.
Next week.
Right. You know, and it's always back to the salt mine. So that happened with the Walker, Texas Ranger. And after a month, they were like, it was two writers, Michael Komen and Andrew Weinberg. And they were both like, mm-hmm. please don't make us go down and look at more. They're like, please, because
our eyes are bleeding.
Right. And they'd miss the writers' meetings because they had to go down and screen. And they're like, and then they started going, there aren't any more. We'd be like, are there more? No. Nope. We looked. And so then we'd stop doing it for a while. And their mm-hmm. moods improved. But then we'd have a week off and Conan would go out in the world. And people were like, more Walker, Texas Ranger. So he'd come back and go, guys, all I'm hearing is people want more clips. And so then I was like, oh God, I'd feel awful. But it was like, guys, you got to look for more. And they, you know what? They kept finding more. I think we showed 96. We had 96 clips that we aired.
They were writing for Walker at that point. They were creating new clips. But
that's
so
right.
Would Conan know what clips were going to air? Or
you know what?
Was that a surprise?
We would
for
rehearse
him?
Like maybe 10 to 12.
Oh, wow.
And we'd pick the best 5. So he would know mm-hmm. the 5. He might not know the order.
I can't believe they had to find 10 to 12 for every one segment that aired. That's a lot of
It's a lot, of clips.
A lot of clips. I can see why they were, why it was wearing
on
them.
Oh, God, yes. No, that I think eventually they were like, here's a title sequence. You know, it's just like, it's from the show.
Yeah. And I know, I mean, anything can become onerous, too. Like, I used to work on The Soup with Joel McHale, and that was involved watching TV and finding clips. And you think, oh, I mean, what a great job. You're watching TV for a living and you're looking for clips. But if you're under a deadline and you have to do it day after day, it feels like homework.
I did heroin for a while, and having to find fresh heroin, it really takes all
It becomes a full-time job.
And then those two guys, Komen and Weinberg, that job of looking at those clips affected them so deeply that they came up with a show called Eagle Heart. starring Chris Elliott, where he played a Texas, yes?
That's right.
Texas Marshal. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yes, permanently scarred.
And they only used dialogue directly with Tim Walker.
So thanks for the question.
Yeah, thanks, John, in Omaha. And if anyone else in Omaha or elsewhere would like to ask us a question, you can email us, insideconanpod@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail, because we love that, 323-209-1079. And hey, you know, if you like the show, you can also support us by rating Inside Conan on iTunes and leaving us a review. Mm-hmm. We occasionally read them.
And in anticipation of you doing that, we'd like to say we love you.
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast, is hosted by Mike Sweeney and me, Jesse Gaskell.
Mm-hmm. Our producer is Lisa Burr.
Team Coco's executive producers are Adam Sachs, Jeff Ross, and Nick Liao.
Engineered and mixed by Joanna Samuel.
Our talent bookers are Gina Batista and Paula Davis, with assistance from Maddie Ogden.
Thanks to Jimmy Vivino for our theme music and interstitials.
You can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
And of course, please subscribe and tell a friend to listen to Inside Conan, or an enemy, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever platform you like best.
I'm not going to tell you what to do.
Put on your hat, it's the Conan Show. Try on some spats, you're gonna have a laugh. Give birth to a calf, it's Conan!
This has been a Team Coco production.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.